This is the August 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists on this USDA report day include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities from Watseka, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas. Our special guest today, Steve Freed of ADM Investor Services in Chicago. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's recap the USDA crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimate numbers for corn. USDA, in its August report, predicts 15.153 billion bushels of the crop will be harvested. That's 613 million more bushels of corn than they had expected when they put those first sets of numbers out in the month of May. They expect that to be on 175.1 bushel to the acre corn yield. Soybeans at 4.06 billion bushels, 180 more million bushels than had been expected earlier in the season, and on the top end of the trade range, the yield at 48.9 bushels to the acre. That's up 2.2 from the May estimate. The corn yield, by the way, was up 7.1 bushels from the May estimate. These numbers would leave us with new crop ending stocks of 2.4 billion bushels in the bin by the time we get to next fall for corn, and 330 million in the bin for soybeans.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. September corn up 1 1/4, 3.22 1/4. The settlement price December at 3.33 on this report day up 1 1/4, and the March 1/2 higher at 3.43 1/2. August beans at $10.03 1/4, down 19 cents. September on out, not nearly so steep in the declines though. September down 2 3/4, November down 2 1/4, 9.81 3/4, January at 9.82 1/4, down 1 1/4 cents. The soft red winter wheat for the day finished the July contract at 482, up 2.5 cents, and the hard red in the July at 478, up 4. Live cattle futures were 37.5 higher at 116.40 in the August. October 2.5 lower at 114.52.5, and August feeders were up 32.5 cents at $149. The nickel lean hogs finished the August unchanged at $67.20. Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at these numbers and what happened in Chicago post-report. Thanks for being with us, Mike.
Always a pleasure to be with you at the end of the week, Todd.
Well, let's start with the one contract that seems to be out of place to me, and I wasn't quite sure why this is the case. August soybeans, unlike the rest of them, finished down 19 cents. Why was that?
I think primarily because the August did expire today on the 12th, and we did have probably the need for the August to fill the gap or come down to the now lead month September. It would have been nice to have seen the September beans close above the $10 handle psychologically, but I'm not really too much worried about it at this point. I think that after Monday's weather update and also crop conditions update for the Delta, if USDA picks up on the heavy, heavy flooding rains that look like we may be having now, then if we don't close above the $10 handle in September, I'll start to take note of that. But overall, other than the world soybean ending stocks, it was a really nice report for the most part, I thought, for the soybean complex.
Why is that the case? Tell me about the numbers as you saw them.
Well, the 330 carryover, it did bring our stocks to use up domestically about 0.9% versus July. But I think the trade is very comfortable with the 325, 330 carryover, given that we have now a record yield. I mean, you think about it, Todd, we're looking at a 330 carryover and darn near a 50 bushel national average. And I think it'd be very hard at this stage of the game to get two-thirds of the producers out in the country to say they've got record yields at this point in the soybeans. So I think between that and we had a lot of product support. In other words, the world meal carryover dropped over 5.5% versus last month. The U.S. soybean oil carryover dropped over 8%. So we're substantially lower in world meal carryover versus last marketing year, substantially lower in U.S. soybean oil carryover versus last year. I think that keeps your crush margins favorable. And therefore, this strong, strong export market of, 3 million metric tons sold in new crop beans again this week on the weekly export sales, I think it keeps the product markets and the domestic market fighting the export markets for beans. So I think we've got probably the highest yield number in both corn and beans at this point. And with the product supply numbers we saw today, I can take what USDA did for the bigger and above estimates for the world soybean carryover of over 71 million tons.
How about for corn? What's your assessment there?
I tell you, if I had to choose one data point that I really thought showed the trade reaction to the report by the close, we did get the world wheat ending stocks decline versus last month, very much needed, on a pickup in demand. But I think even the more important feature that was most questionable is USDA actually submitting in their comments that all but nearly two Corn Belt states had better yields than last year. I think that's just a bridge too far right now, and it's very reminiscent of what we dealt with in 2014. And you may not have time right now for that, but hopefully on the Commodity Week we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, tell me a bit more about the wheat numbers, because these are really the only numbers on the world stage that did go down 97 million bushel, I think, for old crop, and down, 32 million for new crop carryout.
Yeah, if you'd climb into the world wheat numbers more in detail, and looking at it superficially, we went from about a 34.8 world ending stocks to use ratio to 34.5. But if you get deeper into it, we saw a 7.6 million metric ton decline in major exporter production. That led to a 6 million ton decline in major exporter exports, and that which led then to a 4 million metric ton decline in their ending stocks. We didn't pick up hardly any of that increase in exports, and I think that's where I would find some vulnerability and question mark with the USDA numbers. USDA barely budged our numbers for exports. As you said, just a light number, a little over 7/10 of a million, 0.7 million tons. Really the big winner in all this was Russia. They jumped the Russian and the FSU 12 export numbers by 7.5 million tons versus last month. So they think that the Black Sea and Russia will really pound on us in Europe. I question that from a standpoint of quality, and I think just from a standpoint of the logistics in terms of some of the other countries that may need our wheat, like in the Middle East, we may be able to gain some more demand off of that, especially if the dollar stays where it's at or even gets weaker.
What's your expectations for the resumption of trade on Sunday night?
I would say that we're still in a weather market for the soybeans. I think that the reaction by the feed grains was what we needed in terms of what turned the market around. I feel that is a substantially strong point at this point, Todd, for continuation of movement higher. I think that the beans could once again become the leader to the upside if this weather does not turn out to be just nearly perfect at this stage of the game. I would also throw out the idea that when you look at the potential yield numbers going into the September report, there may be a lot more people, and this could be the end users, and this is where the cash basis comes into play. There may be a lot more end users and traders and analysts out there suggesting maybe we have a lower yield, not a higher yield. And I think that'd be very welcome news to the trade sentiment, given we've had a weaker dollar all week this week, and given we've had a very nice crude oil rally this week as well. The outside markets are very much supporting this market in the grains right now.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Now, Eric Snodgrass is here. He's from Agrible, from right here in Urbana-Champaign. Eric, thanks so much for being with us. Tell me about the weather forecast going forward. Looks a little bit on the wet side. Maybe we've had some rainfall, too, that you can discuss across the Midwest.
Yeah, so, you know, the last couple of weeks, parts of the Corn Belt really kind of dried out. You know, we had some drier conditions in southern Minnesota and parts of Iowa, northern half of Illinois, even parts of Indiana and Ohio. And so, you know, drying out this time of year may not have too big of an impact on corn, but it certainly could on beans. But then we had this cold front sliding south through the Corn Belt, kicked off a great round of storms in Minnesota a couple days ago. That really pushed through southern Minnesota, Iowa, southern Wisconsin, even to parts of Illinois over the last 24 hours. In fact, it's been quite a bit of rain. Now, these storms right now are kind of hanging out on that cold frontal boundary, stretching between Chicago, Bloomington, Lincoln area, and they're trying to move on off to the east. So we're bringing some rain to some places that have been kind of dry. I mean, I'm looking right now at my lawn out my window, and it looks a little dormant, looks a little brown in places, and that'll happen if you get some heat and you get some dryness, you know, at this time of year. But the big thing is that cold front's knocking our temperatures back. You know, we were pretty warm yesterday on Thursday. Right now, behind this cold front, temperatures are 10 to 15 degrees cooler than they were yesterday. But it's that cold front that's really going to be the big player as we look into the weather tonight and over the weekend and start of next week. And that's because right now we have this thing called the Bermuda High. Big dominant high pressure system that kind of sits in the subtropics, kind of just off of the east coast of the United States. And it is spinning in this big clockwise pattern, and that pushes moisture right up through the Gulf of Mexico. And so that's what we're watching, this large area of tropical moisture getting kind of thrust into the middle part of the country, right up through the lower and mid-Mississippi River Valley. Now, when that stuff hits the front, the air is forced to rise. When the air rises, it expands and cools, and you get condensation. There you go. You got clouds and rain. But the thing is where that boundary sets up kind of stretches from kind of the southern half of Missouri, southern part of Illinois, into southern Indiana and parts of Ohio. And what we're expecting to see over the next few days is just round after round of rain and potentially storms that kind of just keep going over the same area. And so, you know, we start talking about Missouri, Kentucky, southern Illinois, and Indiana. We're talking some wet conditions coming up, maybe 3+ inches of rain. And I'm not going to rule out the possibility of maybe as much as 5 inches of rain. But the question I have to ask is, you know, what does this help? Could it help the struggling bean crop in parts of Indiana and parts of Ohio? It certainly could. But is it going to do much for corn? Probably not at this stage. But that's what I'm looking at in the short term. Big time rains to our south.
Okay, can you stretch that out into a longer term, August and September? If it continues, that would not be good into the month of September.
Yeah, so this is what we're seeing for the remainder of August. You know, we look constantly what the flow looks like in the jet stream. What are the winds doing there? And what we see is a very transient pattern. We've seen that most of this summer. It lacks any large blocking features like big ridges or big troughs that stay in place. So I don't expect to see any long-duration heat, and I also don't expect to see any long-duration cool-offs, but I do see this. This is kind of a bigger thing. When we get around August 21st, 22nd, 23rd, in that time frame, so we're looking out here about 10 days, we start to see a pretty big cool-down sweeping its way through the Midwest, starting in the Northern Plains, sweeping right through the Midwest, big-time cool-down. And what that might give us is some overnight lows that may feel a little bit more like fall than they do summer lows. So we do see that one event happening, but like I said, nothing that seems at this point to hang on for a long time. I do see one thing in September, though, and we run out one of the European models, the big one, the ECMWF. It runs out for about 45 days, and one of the things it was starting to pick up on was a decent dry down in the kind of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio area as we get into September. It was keeping, as is another model I like to look at called the CFSV2. Well, both of those models were keeping the western and northern Corn Belt wet as you get into August. I'm sorry, as you get into September. So we got some of these bigger players to be watching out for the next 45 days or so.
And then one last thing, since we're into September, that's kind of the time frame we begin to transition. We start talking about harvest here and the planting season in South America. What do you see for them early on?
Yeah, that's a great question, because up until recently, I had been forecasting the La Nina that was, you know, scheduled and kind of forecast to evolve here to be much stronger than it was and have a bigger impact on the bean crop in Brazil and Argentina. But that La Nina has come in much weaker than we had forecast about 9 months ago. And as a result, this could have less of a negative impact on the crop down there. And when we're staring at these global balance sheets and potentially record yields in the United States for beans, to suggest that Brazil and Argentina could have a halfway decent, perhaps even a really good bean crop is an important thing to be looking at. It's all based on that La Nina forecast, though, because the La Nina has a much bigger impact on them than it does us, just given their proximity. We got to watch this closely, and we'll keep giving you updates, you know, every week as what we're seeing in Brazil. But I'd say right now, we're looking at a near average crop coming out of Brazil this upcoming year, just given the current weather conditions.
Eric, thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agribull, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 12th day of August. It's USDA Report Day. Daryl Goodnow joins us to take a look at this morning's numbers. What a big report this one has been. August can be a game changer. However, when we thought we had a big crop, the idea that this thing is as big as USDA is saying for both corn and soybeans is pretty phenomenal. Daryl, tell me about the numbers.
Right. I mean, big crops. So USDA is saying a national average corn yield of 175.1. That would clearly be a record yield and well above trend for this year, about 10 bushels above trend. Would give us a crop exceeding 15.1 billion bushels. And even with some pretty generous forecasts of consumption for the year ahead, USDA is saying stocks will build from 1.7 billion at the end of this year to 2.4 billion next year, pushing the marketing year average price down to about $3.15. Soybeans of 48.9 bushels per acre, again above trend, above last year's record, above market expectations. It gives you a crop over 4 billion bushels, and even with some generous forecasts, I think, again, of consumption, you see a stock build slightly to about 330 million bushels, and USDA saying a $9.10 average price for the year.
Given all of that, the marketplace seems to have handled these numbers surprisingly well throughout the day Friday.
It really did. I think two things. One, the market was trading pretty big yields going into the report. I think, based on a little bit of the analysis I did, I think the market was really trading above the average trade guess, if you will, on both corn and soybean yield. So there were some pretty big numbers built into the market. And then there's also this talk now of, you know, maybe this crop won't quite reach the lofty forecast that we're seeing here in August, that, you know, the end of the growing season has not been ideal in every area. We've got some early maturity, some warmer weather, some drier weather occurred in the first half of August. Perhaps we will see the yield numbers come down a smidgen in the September-October report. So I think the market is, you know, initially gasped when they saw the numbers, and we did see a pretty big price reaction. But I think as the day went on, some rethinking of just how big these crops can be and, frankly, how low prices already are.
You feel that we might put in a bottom in the market earlier in the season rather than later for corn, and I don't know about for soybean.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, you say a harvest low on corn, you know, one side or the other of peak harvest. This one may be a little earlier than when we get into the full throat of harvest. Obviously, the September production report will matter a lot. Soybeans, you know, not necessarily thinking that we'll see the low early. A lot depends now, I think, on how South America responds in the year ahead with acreage and how their weather turns out. There's some talk that Argentina is going to move acreage to corn away from soybeans. That That would certainly continue to support the U.S. export market. And what you see maybe on soybeans is a flatter market, perhaps, than you see on corn. Corn harvest lows, a slow seasonal recovery after that. Soybeans, just kind of a flatter seasonal pattern as we go forward.
Farmers absolutely positive at this point that they did not get enough corn sold. What would they do?
Yeah, I think at this point, I think holding corn is the best strategy to the extent we can, physically or with derivatives. I think maintaining ownership is probably the best strategy now until we see the September-October reports and give consumption a chance to continue to grow the way it has been. And so I'm not expecting huge price rebound, but probably enough to cover storage costs, get us into the spring of the year, see what kind of weather we have next year.
Still have some premium for the soybean above the crop insurance price, so that's rapidly eroded. What do we do there?
Yeah, I think it has rapidly eroded, and I don't see that as a big marketing factor at this point, that the margin is pretty small. And I think now we say, you know, what are the market fundamentals? And demand is the key going forward here on soybeans. And if we kind of have the export strength that the USDA is saying, then I think we can maintain these cash prices going forward for the next several months.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Darrell Good, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.